Welcome to the French Horn Experiment. I'm Nathan Lutz, and in this podcast, I'll be exploring with you all things French horn, from solo repertoire to orchestral excerpts, from modern experiments to old favorites. From the outside, the orchestra looks like a crowd of the world's best-behaved people. They arrive for rehearsal, they greet each other happily, they sit down, and oh look, they're warming up. Some are playing arpeggios, they're feeling out the range of their instruments for the day, checking for tuning, getting the fuzz out of their muscles. It's the musician's equivalent of stretching before a workout. All well and good, but the peace in this cacophony is short-lived. Inevitably, somebody crosses a line and plays an excerpt. It's a little thing at first. Maybe someone has been practicing for an audition and is just habit at this point to accidentally start one of the pieces. Especially for brass players, music written in the time before vowels necessarily uses arpeggios. It's natural, totally innocent. But the tension in the room is palpable. Someone is showing off. I'm not saying it always starts with the trumpets, but let's be honest here, it pretty much always does. I have a theory that instrumental stereotypes are pretty much all true. See, when people are picking their instrument, what they're really doing is self-selecting into the stereotype they wouldn't fit into. Maybe they weren't always true. I'm sure trombonists were all saints at some point, but they sit in the back far from scrutiny, have plenty of bars of rest during which to get into trouble, and have a slide which lets them make funny noises. Someone was bound to come up with some sort of joke about them, and true or false, it would have become a self-fulfilling prophecy, a self-perpetuating stereotype which will mean that middle school band directors everywhere will always wish the trombones had never been invented. So here we are, back in the orchestra, and somebody just played an excerpt. All the geeks, the French horns, the bassoons, and so on, are trying to remember if their instrument ever gets to play that melody too. Extra points if it's actually a duet, and someone will definitely start trying to play the second line. But to the trumpets, a challenge has just been issued. If the section is friendly, someone will play a different line. If they're cutthroat, they'll all start trying to see who can play the same one best. At this point, the conductor should probably put their foot down, but they might not even be in the same room at this point. This vicious cycle might end in bloodshed, and all the bassoons and oboes are armed with very sharp knives. So what do? You already know, I just told you. As a French horn player, I just want to join in. Only, most of the time, I don't get the same melodies. Even when the horn part is just as good, it probably doesn't have the same lines, and shared passages are far more common within sections than between them. So, let's just do the next best thing. Let's steal all their music. It'll probably confuse them, but who cares? It's fun. What do I look for when I'm picking other instruments' music to play? Well, first, it should be a piece that is important to their repertoire. Those first two solos were trumpet lines from Mahler's Fifth Symphony and then Stravinsky's Petrushka, and you really do seem to hear those any time you have more than three orchestral trumpets in a room at the same time. It should also be a piece which was designed around that instrument's capabilities. The third excerpt was a trombone solo from Ravel's Bolero, which uses the trombone's slide to achieve a really playful effect. To play this kind of solo on horn, you have to use extended techniques, like holding your valves halfway down to prevent the tone from locking on a particular overtone. The fourth excerpt was the bassoon solo at the beginning of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, and it reaches for the limits of that instrument's range, resulting in a cold timbre which you don't hear too often, but which is a big part of why that solo is so well known. But what of solos which weren't originally intended to be played the way they are now? The next solo is the opening clarinet solo from George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, and from the opening performance, clarinet players have been messing with what's written on the page. The bend at the beginning of that excerpt isn't actually written in. On the page, it's a chromatic glissando, but the first clarinet player to be handed the part decided to do a little improvising, and the composer loved it. Even though the part was never changed, it's become part of the orchestral tradition to read the part that way. But lip bends aren't the only challenge you face when transcribing music for horn. Another critical problem is range. Take the violin. A violinist can jump with relative ease across several octaves, and the comfortable range of that instrument is several octaves above the horns. So to play almost any of its music, I need to transpose down a long ways, and I might have to choose between a part which pushes my high range limits or my low range ones. This is the violin recitative for Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, and for reference, the bottom note that I'm landing on here is a concert A0. Here's another important question when choosing music to steal. What instrument is the natural enemy of the French horn? I know, I've been acting the part of the innocent here, but the fact is that just behind composers of march music, the saxophone is the biggest offender of the French horn world. While few orchestral works call for the instrument, it seems that almost every piece of concert band music takes nearly all the good parts which would work well on the horn and instead gives them to the saxophones, leaving us to stew on all those offbeat passages. True, your average middle school section wouldn't be able to play those passages, but is that because middle school horn players would never be able to do it, or because they've never been asked to? Probably the former, but it still feels good to take this beautiful line from Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances. Thank you. It's great to steal from the melodically rich saxophones and give to the, at least in concert band, poorer French horns, but there are some instruments which I can't help but feel for, even from our perspective. See, horn players have it rough in marches, but at least the offbeats can occasionally be an intellectual challenge to fit in rhythmically. The misfortunate tuba section, on the other hand, has to play those downbeats, when they're playing at all. And in this case, I really did have to do some digging to find a major tuba solo from a piece I know. And here it is, the solo from Prokofiev's Dark Fifth Symphony. Theoretically, the horn's range actually does reach to the bottom of this solo, but in practice, almost nobody I've ever met can actually attack notes this low, so I brought this up an octave. That's an excerpt from one of the lowest orchestral instruments. Let's jump to one of the highest. This is the flute, an instrument blessed with no lack of soaring solos to play. There are simply too many great ones to pick from. Do I play the theatrical Peter and the Wolf, or something technical from Shostakovich? What about the beautiful Daphnis at Chloe suite, or else one of the many great March flute solos? Oh, maybe something Baroque from Telemann, maybe? Something classical, maybe Mozart or Beethoven. Okay, there are just too many awesome flute excerpts to choose from, so I'm going to have to do a proper piece for unaccompanied flute. This is Debussy's Syrinx. Transcribing that piece for horn meant taking it down one, and in some sections, two full octaves, but it works pretty well. The tempo is flexible enough to allow me to get by with just a fraction of the flute's dexterity, and it's designed to allow for plenty of places to breathe. A Allowing for breaks is critical for writing horn parts. For passages maybe 3 or 4 lines long, a horn player can go 8 to 12 bars between breaths. But after that, it gets harder and harder to keep holding your breath until you either need a full bar to get air into your lungs, or you start needing to take catch breaths every 4 bars or so. But what about instruments which don't need to breathe at all? This is a big challenge with cello music. Besides the fact that the cello can much more easily bounce between different parts of its range, cello players can just keep bowing and bowing as long as they want, so composers don't always add breaks. Probably the most famous music for cello is Bach's 6 cello suites, and in this case, I'm not having to do the transcribing myself. Horn players have been playing these for a while. This is Wendell Haas's transcription of the prelude from Bach's 1st cello suite. The cello suites are challenging in a way that not a lot of music written for horn is. You have to make a lot of choices about what parts to keep in, where to insert breaths, and which notes to leave out. They demand range, flexibility, and dexterity in a way which is really rewarding to build up, so I'm going to keep working through the cello suites in future episodes. So what would it sound like to try to transcribe not just one part, but all the parts of a piece for horn? Take the whole piece and rearrange the melodies and harmonies so that it works within the confines of the standard French horn quartet. Last episode, I started with a reduced score of Stars and Stripes Forever and built a horn quartet version of that piece. It was hard, the parts weren't intended for a French horn's limitations, but it was so much fun. So how hard could it be to take one of my favorite pieces of music, which is already written for just four instruments, and just transpose the notes over to French horn parts? It so happens that the piece I'm talking about is actually a string quartet, a piece for two violins, both of which play much higher than I can, a viola, which plays in generally the same place as I do, but which can jump ranges much more easily, and cello, which sits in an awkward part of my low range. Also, none of these instruments need to breathe at all, so there are almost no rests in this whole piece. But hey, how bad can it be? This is a simplified version of the first movement from Dvorak's String Quartet No. 12, called the American Quartet. I love this piece to death, and it pretty near killed me. Take a listen. Thank you. It turns out that there are some pieces which don't lend themselves well to transcription for horn, but even if by the end I'm struggling to think from exhaustion and lack of air, these parts are just so much fun. Just really, really bad ideas. This has been the third episode of the French Horn Experiment. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, leave a like and comment if there's something you'd like to hear me explore. And if you haven't heard any of the pieces I referenced in this episode, I really recommend checking out their original versions.